You're listening to 101.9 WDET. I'm Nick Austin, and right now I am happy to be joined by perhaps my favorite pianist going out there in the world of soul, playing the piano, especially because he has that connection to Detroit, which we love so much. And you'll get a chance to see him as he's coming back to town as part of a concert series performing at L Club on July 8th. I'm talking about the one and only legendary Zoe. Zoe, how are you doing today?
Everything is good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well, especially because I get to talk to you because it's been a second, man. In fact, I think last time I talked to you, that might have been around the time Sunstorm had dropped, which tells you it's been a stretch of time because you've got like a lot of other stuff.
That's been over a decade then, man. I thought it'd been sooner than that.
For you, what do you think was one of the releases that you had out there that for people they really got to go, oh, wait, this is what Zoe's about? Do you have a release that was like that?
Oh, man, that's tough. That's tough for me because I try not to lean one way or another. I think the one that really kind of did it, that really kind of convinced people was Man-Made. And that was because, you know, Sunstorm was kind of the introduction as far as, you know, the compilation style album, you know, where it's a producer-based album where I'm grabbing different artists to, you know, to sing on it and things like that. And then I think Man-Made kind of solidified it because it was the second one. And, you know, nobody wanted to get hit with that sophomore slump. So, you know, I think folks heard Man-Made and was like, okay, this dude is for real. Like he's for real about it. So I think Man-Made was the one that really kind of made people turn their heads a little bit and understand that Sunstorm and everything before that wasn't a fluke.
But for a lot of us here, we care so much about Fonz and Larry Mizell and the music that they made. Were artists like that, were those guys inspiration to you? And if so, you know, tell me how so, maybe with a track that kind of epitomizes for you what they were all about.
Very much so. The Mizell brothers are huge inspirations to me, just as far as listening to their production style and the layering, you know, the drums, the piano, the synths, and, you know, just the feel that they were creating with a lot of this music. And for those who aren't familiar, if you listen to like Donald Byrd, the Blackbirds, you listen to Bobby Humphrey, they did some stuff with Rance Allen. They did Boogie Oogie Oogie with
Taste of Honey.
Taste of Honey. Yeah. They did that. You know, even some stuff with LTD, all that type of stuff. It's just big. It's lush, very melodic. And that type of music has always spoken to me. And, you know, between like Mizell Brothers and Leon Silvers III, you know, in this like early 80s, late 70s run with Solar Records, huge inspirations to me, even before I, you know, started playing music. Like those are the things that I was hearing around the house, especially with Leon Silvers. Like Shalimar was like my first favorite group, period. So that was like the group that I had, that was mine, you know, that my parents didn't put me on to. This group was what I listened to. You know, I kind of go back to that, and, you know, we're all very nostalgic. Our generation is probably the kings and queens of nostalgia. Just going back to that feeling and what feels good and like trying to pick apart that type of music. And it's like, why does this feel this way? Why does it give me goosebumps when I listen to it, even though I've heard it 1,000 times? And, you know, taking that feeling and trying to translate it in my own way and spit it out to the public, you know, so that people can talk about my music that way. That's really the inspiration there. Not necessarily taking it to copy it, but taking it to figure out, you know, how can I make people feel the way that these songs made me feel?
Mm-hmm. And is there any specific song or technique? Is there something that you've learned in that journey that gave you more of an explanation like, oh, I see, that's why that's that secret sauce, or when they do a little bit of this, that's what I really like. Is there anything you've learned in that journey?
I think with them is it was like a lot of just different dynamics. Like I said, I talked about the layering, but like taking some of the layers out, putting them back in. And when there's a breakdown, like what do you keep in there? Do you keep just the drums and the bass? Mm. Do you keep just the drums and the piano? You know, it's really crazy. I'm actually getting goosebumps talking about it, ironically enough. Just being able to kind of pull that. And to me, like that's part of the full spectrum of production to me. You know, just being able to piece everything together and pull when you need to pull, and the usage of space, not overproducing it and not putting too much on it, but, you know, putting enough on it to where you're able to get that little extra head nod and that, you know, that extra shoulder and into the song, because, you know, you can't help but do anything else.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think people will feel that. And one of the things that you talk about nostalgia, and you're a self-admitted 80s baby, as you just mentioned in there, and people who listen to your music, they hear that. But you can really, again, hear it with this mature production that you've, I think, always had, even if you're doing different things in one song or producing for other people. People can come back, and it's that grown music, you know, that grown folks music. What is it about that sound that keeps coming back to you, or that you love so much bringing to people? Why do people associate you with like grown folks music?
I think that's just because that's what we are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you make music, I think people take to it because they believe you. And it's believable. With me being 44 years of age and, you know, needing to pay these bills every month, it's like, you know, this is the music that you're going to hear.
Yeah, that's right.
From me and Fonte and Tall Black and Deborah, and you know, this is the music that you're going to hear, because this is the music that we have surrounded ourselves with for so long.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Tall Black, you mentioned Fonte, you mentioned Deborah. I know Tall Black that you collaborated with. Like I said, we're going to get into that Abstractions release from 2021 a little bit later on. And Deborah Bond, who we love also. Foreign Exchange, though, that's a lot of people got familiar with you working with Fonte, working with Nicolay. How are those collaborations going, man? You guys got anything else coming up, or is that like from one specific time? Because I haven't heard a bunch from them getting together. And I do know Nicolay just released something this summer.
Right. Yeah, Nick has been working on his solo stuff. He just put a dope single out. I think it was like last week. And you know, me and Tay are still on the phone. We still making stuff happen. He's actually been busy with doing Little Brother stuff and doing the Little Brother documentary and working to get that stuff out. I'm not gonna go too much into it because I don't know what he wants out there, or you know, what he doesn't. But he and I were actually just on the phone the other night talking about a couple of new songs for Cy Smith. So me and Tall Black Guy we've been doing a bulk of the production for her new album. You know, we're finally getting into working on our follow-up album to Abstractions. So we still busy, like that's still family. And you know, I have to remind people, like just because you don't see the releases, Foreign Exchange releases, like everybody's still family. We still talking, you know, we're still communicating and still behind here making music.
When you see, for example, your work, you know, I'm going to expect to see a Cy Smith. I'm going to expect to see a Fonte. I'm going to expect to see Deborah. I'm going to expect to see part of that crew. Why is it so important for you to bring back artists like that and for you guys to be on each other's work when you're creating this music out here?
Well, I think it's important because a lot of times when we're out here, we're out on the road, or we're just out on social media checking out, you know, these comments and things like that. A lot of people, you hear a lot of, there's no more music like the music we just talked about. There's no more music like that. You know, I stopped listening to new music and, you know, in 2000 and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there like, y'all are missing out on so much, man. Because, you know, as you know, just as a DJ, it's like I can't even keep up with the new music and the new music that is dope. Just putting out like a Sunstorm, or putting out an Abstractions, or putting out a Forefront. You know, these are things that we do to try to make sure that our people get to hear these artists. And, you know, these are artists that we rock with. And so we want you to take our recommendations and you rock with them too. So that, you know, not only does our fan base expand a little bit, but theirs does as well. So, you know, I hear a lot of people tell me like, yo, you know, you put me on to Shantae Can, to Gwen Bond. And, you know, and that feels great, because it's like, you know, that's wonderful. Like, that's what we want to do. We want to be able to put more eyes on the artists that we love. And, you know, we want y'all to love them, too.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, for Abstractions, you know, that's that release that you had with Tall Black Guy. You had Detroit connections all throughout that thing. Divinity and Piranha Head, Elzai's in there, Black Milk's in there, DJ Dez is in there. Why was it important for you to bring in so many Detroit voices in that album? And where does Detroit fit into your music, being someone who's from the hometown here?
Well, both of us, me and Tall Black, are from the crew. We both from Detroit. So when we collaborated, it wasn't necessarily a running joke, but it was just kind of like, you know, this sounds real Detroit, dog. Like, even, for example, Hold My Hand. When we did the music for Hold My Hand, which was crazy enough, was like the third song we ever did. We called that joint Woodward Avenue. Just the instrumental was called Woodward Avenue, because it was like, we was like, this sound like you riding down Woodward Avenue in a Lincoln or a Caddy. And you know what I mean? Like, it just sounded like home. It sounded like the crib. So, you know, when we started to put the album together and really start to get things moving forward, we were like, you know, we've got to get Detroit on here. Like, this is a Detroit album. It's pretty much an ode to the crib. So we had to get Piranha Head and Divinity, Black and L, Sax Appeal, and Aaron Janik, you know, on horns. You know, it was very, we had to get Dez. Like, it was really, really Detroit. We wanted to stake our claim at the crib, even connected. You know, we call that instrumental Verners, for example. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, the four to the floor house heads type of stuff. That reminds me of staying up at night in like 87, 88 and listening to JLB when they would just let the DJs run mixes and, you know, be house mixes. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's what that reminds me of. So folks know, folks at the crib know that when we are away from Detroit, like, we rep Detroit hard. So we want all eyes on the crib at all times.
Since I got you isolated right now, and hey, we'll keep this between us. It's not like anybody's recording this for an interview or anything. What's a track from Tall Black Guy that you love, or something, a piece of his that you love so much? Tell us about that track. That's something that you keep coming back to from his library.
You know, it was the very first one that I heard from him, and that was called Speed of Light. And it was by Mario and Malice Sweet. And I remember where I was. I was in Seattle. One of my homegirls put me on to it. She was like, you got to check this out. And I was like, who is it? She told me. I was like, I never heard of him. She played it. And I was like, blown away. I was like, yo, like, I always judge music. You know, does it make me want to go into the studio, or does it make me wish that I actually produced it? And that was one of them joints that was the latter. It made me wish I had produced that song, because I was like, yo, the drums are crazy. And then it was just like kind of minimal movement and chords and stuff over top of it. But it was like very just, it was really colorful. I was like, yo, this is crazy. Like, who did this track? And I think she told me, you know, Tall Black Guy. And that's when I became a fan. I was a fan instantly. Find out he's from Detroit, and then find out that he's getting ready to remix This Could Be the Night. From there, that's when he and I, like, relationship pretty much started. Like, we, you know, we would chat online. But he and I didn't even end up meeting face-to-face until 2017 when he, you know, moved back stateside. You know, we ended up collaborating for the first time in 2019. And what's crazy is our first collaboration, first time we ever made music together, it was so crazy. That joint was so cold. It still hasn't come out yet, because we haven't cut it on anybody yet, but it will, I guarantee it. You know, we kind of looked at each other like, dude, why didn't we do this sooner? But I mean, you know, everything happens the way it's supposed to happen. I think that our collaboration, I know for me, like, it kept me afloat as an artist, because, you know, I was going through some personal stuff in 2019. You know, my stuff was starting to kind of plateau a little bit. And, you know, I think getting with Tall Black, that really gave me a nice boost. And I think that, you know, he said, you know, the same on his end, but I definitely say it on my end, like, that, you know, that guy definitely gave me a creative boost on the side.
Man, that's so important, man. We got to remember the artists we love, the performers, the musicians. They're people, too. They go through things. They get inspired by music and by others, just like we do listening. And one of the artists that you're working with that's going to be performing at the show with you at L Club on July 8th is also vocalist Deborah Bond, who is someone else that I wish more people had a chance to learn about, listen to. I mean, those who know or love her, but some more need to know about her, and they'll get a chance to at this concert. I asked the same question to you for her. Can you think of a track, a release, a specific song or something that you love from her, and tell us why that's the track that you love so much, what you love about what she's doing in that cut musically?
You know what? It's off of her new album, and it's called Stride. I love that album. I love that song. Stride is my joint. And I've told her this, and I've seen her perform it live, and it's, you know, it takes on another life of its own. And but yeah, Stride off of her newest album, Compass. Like, that's my joint. I love that joint. The single is dope too. Radio. That's another one. I've known Deborah pretty much since I moved out to Maryland, which was in 2006. We met that same year, because she's out this way too. She's in Maryland, in DC. So, you know, it's been really dope to see her come into her own, and like, she's a monster on stage. She is a performer's performer on stage. I'm really excited at the fact that we get to take her to these different cities and show people what we've known for years. She gets on stage, man, and transforms, man. And I love every bit of it. And it's exactly what me and Tall Black enjoy in a performance and in a performer. Like, she's perfect for the show.
So speaking of this show, again, that's happening July 8th at Elk Club. For people who come out to the show, what should they expect to see, man? Why they need to come out besides seeing that monster performance from Deborah Bond?
Man, it's a high energy show. Like, we enjoy lively crowds. We enjoy giving energy and also receiving it. We all three of us got jams. You know, I'm just giving you a list of why you should come. And, you know, it's our hometown show. So right. We come back home and it's always a little bit different energy. It's always a little bit more up. Our band is totally from Detroit. They're going to be playing their hearts out. Like, it's going to be left on the stage on July 8th. I guarantee you.
That's awesome. Before we close out and let people know how they can find out more information about you and what you're up to, I want to ask one more question. I kind of know a little bit of the answer to this one, but you do have an interesting story in how you got into music, because as I understand it, for a while, you thought you were going to be a baseball player or was actually pretty good at it. For folks who aren't so familiar with the story, how does a guy who's sitting out here thinking that he's going to be playing baseball end up becoming one of our favorite performers in music?
Man, I don't even know. I took the scenic route. For real. You know, my number one passion growing up and what ended up paying for college even was baseball. I ended up getting drafted out of St. Martin de Porres, which is not there anymore. I think it's a charter school now over on 6 Mile of Schaefer. But, you know, got drafted to Toronto Blue Jays, went to Western Kentucky University, played 4 years there. And once baseball ended, you know, I didn't get drafted again and I didn't try to pursue it anymore. I was pretty much at that point, I was pretty tired of it. Like, it had become a job at that point. But, you know, I was still young. I still had a ton of energy and a lot of time to do it in. And, you know, I loved music because my parents kept music around the house. I had piano lessons early. So I already knew how to play. You know, I just kind of, what I call it, a transfer of passions. I transferred my passion from baseball to music. I had a keyboard down at school with me. And I started, at that time, I was just making beats. I was like, you know, I want to sell beats. And, you know, I'm listening to JD, I'm listening to DJ Premier and Pete Rock and Alchemist and all these guys. And I'm like, man, I'm just going to make a living selling beats. And, you know, until I found out that a lot of cats that I knew of, you know, they ain't had no money either. So right. Selling beats went out the window real quick. So, you know, I went from selling, you know, wanting to sell beats to actually let me start making songs. Let me start making tracks and maybe put out my own album and see how that works. And, you know, after that, let's put out a remix album so you see what my music sounds like with vocalists over top of it. And, you know, not too long after that, then I moved out here and started networking with a whole different group of people. And, you know, it was interesting how it worked out. I think it really kind of crossed the line when I met Fonte in Ann Arbor at the Blind Pig after a Little Brother show and found out that he had already heard of who I was. And I was like, oh, word, that's kind of crazy. That was back in 2005. We exchanged numbers and we started working together pretty much like 3 months later. You know, we've been working together. Here we are almost 20 years later and we still at it. And that's like literally my brother. We just got different parents. So, you know, it's been an interesting journey, man. I still don't know it all. We're still learning. And because I mean, the music industry is changing literally every 3 to 6 months. So we're still learning how to market this, how to let people know about it, how to release it, what to do, you know, should it be a surprise? You know what I mean? Like, and it seemed like, you know, like as an independent artist, like all of our releases are surprises. So, you know, it's people 2-3 years removed. It's like, yo, man, I didn't even know Forefront was out. It's like, well, surprise. There you go. You know what I'm saying?
That's so, right.
It's really crazy, man. But at the end of it, like this is what I do full time. I love it to death. You know, I don't plan on stopping anytime soon.
For people who want to learn more about you, Zoe, and what you're up to, what's the best way for them to do it?
Go to zo35.com. It's alphanumeric. It's Z-O, the number 3, H-R-E-E, the number 5, I-V-E.com. And that's on Twitter, also Instagram and Facebook.